Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Fidel. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texarkana, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Tennessee, Chicopee, Spirit Lake, Grand Lake, Devil's Lake, Crater Lake, the Beach Lake, God.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely. It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show. Broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show. Broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show. Broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show. Broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments.
Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Jumble Justice Radio Show. And our audio is a little jumbled tonight. Something's going on beyond us at the Blog Talk Radio switchboard, where things seem to repeat themselves, and then other matters that get started can't be stopped. And anyway, I'm your host, Keith Haley, and Audrey, believe me, none of this is your fault. I've sorted through this before. We want to thank you for helping us get started tonight, and welcome to the show. And Johnny Cash, we want to thank you on that trip that you took across the United States tonight to 90 different cities and states, and I hope you had your earmuffs and mufflers on tonight, or muffler on tonight, because it's cold in some places in the U.S., including where we're broadcasting from. Emily, good to see you in the booth tonight. I guess Mike is off. He's out on private business, and maybe he'll tell us next week what he's been doing out there. But our purpose of our show is always to do the same thing, is to discuss the news, issues, events, and developments in this field of criminal justice that's often very difficult to practice and sometimes even humorous, and we'll have a example of a couple of those perhaps tonight. Our show is dedicated to all those untiring police, court, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and around the world. And what we try to do in this show and is look inside of the field of criminal justice and look up close at some of its professionals. And every now and then we'll bring on some historical perspectives. In fact, we're going to do that tonight. And we've done that at other shows before. And people have actually called me and told me they like some of these. We'll hold it and tell you a little bit later what we're going to do tonight. The technology we're using here is Blog Talk Radio, and it's a leading-edge technology. Alan Levy is the chief executive officer of BTR, and I like to say he's the genius behind the medium because he is. And this is an outfit that has gone from a few shows per day or several per week to literally thousands of shows a week. And what is possible on the Blog Talk Radio Network is that any person, any interest group, any organization, no matter what your interest is, you can have your own show, you can broadcast live and streaming audio over the internet to an unlimited number of listeners. And the cost to do that, how many thousands is that? It's absolutely free. Think of that. Anybody can have their own radio show. They can broadcast live and streaming audio over the internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners. And then when the show's done, within a matter of 5 to 10 minutes, the show's archived where you can go back and listen to it, or you can download the show to your own computer, MP3 player, whatever, and listen to it again, or for the first time, at another time, a time of your convenience. And I'm writing a paper about the show, Jumble Justice, and what we've been through here the last year or more. And I was surprised to find out, I should know, but we have done 71 shows. Tonight is actually show number 72, if you can believe that. Those of you who've been with us for a while, we have done 72 shows. What I'm doing is a little content analysis of the shows and the topic, the type of guest, the organization they were from, et cetera, and sort of classifying, categorizing a lot of that data. And I'm going to present it at a conference in Cincinnati in between March 11th and March 14th, and that's the Academy of Criminal Justice Sciences meeting. And for those of you who have never been to that, that's the place to be. People come there from all over the world once a year in the field of criminal justice. It will be primarily academics, but a lot of practitioners, too, from all kinds of different agencies. I've been on groups with Turkish police and all over the place, so they come from everywhere. But there will be about 1,400 papers presented on almost every subject imaginable in the field of criminal justice. So that's what I'm preparing this paper for on our Jumble Justice Radio show. So, ladies and gentlemen, you can get your own show. If you're an academic, a high school teacher, wherever, you could actually be broadcasting a show and archive the show and then use it later as a learning resource in the class if you choose to do that. Our show will be broken up tonight pretty much in the same categories it usually is. We'll talk a little bit about some criminal justice news, and there's always news in criminal justice. How could we talk about all of it? But I select some each week, and Mike brings me some once in a while. But we'll have the new show. We'll have listener call-ins if you'll do it early, because, again, we're going to be using some old radio shows, and we are really going to take you back tonight farther than we've ever gone. You know, I have sort of an affinity for these old-time radio shows, and particularly these mystery shows of every particular type of detective imaginable. But anyway, tonight we're going to take you back to an old show called Police Headquarters. It always starts with a ring up to the police station, and the case or the crime takes off from there. And tonight, if you went back far enough in radio, shows were often shorter than we can imagine, but these shows were 15 minutes each. And we're going to try to look at two of these tonight if we have time, but certainly one. The first is called the Tommy Gun Murders, and then the second one is called Life Insurance Scheme. And it's part of a show called Police Headquarters. Probably already know you can listen to our show on the Windows Media Player off your computer, or you can actually call into the show number, which is 347-996-5983, 347-996-5983, and I can take as many as five calls at a time, and you can hear the entire show on your cell phone. In fact, that's what I do. As I broadcast on the cell phone and listen to the entire show on the phone. So works out very nicely. Call up. Audrey, you got your blonde joke tonight, I think. Boy, I hope you've recorded that into audio. I hope it works a little better than our first audio communication tonight. Let's see what this sounds like. I like this joke because it involves one of my favorite automobiles. Not my most favorite, but one of them. So let's see how this sounds. Waiting, waiting.
Professor Haley, I know that you like jokes about automobiles, so here is a blunt joke about a Mercedes. Oscar drove his brand new Mercedes to his favorite sporting goods store. He parked it outside and went in to do a little perusing with Jen, his regular saleswoman. Jen was a pretty blonde, and as Oscar walked into the store, she happily greeted him. But he requested to look around alone today before he needed her help. She obliged and let him do his thing. 5 minutes later, Jen came running up to him yelling, "Oscar! Oscar! I just saw someone driving off with your new Mercedes. Dear God! Did you try to stop him?" "No," she said, "I did better than that. I got the license plate number."
All right, that's a great one. Oh, I love the blonde jokes, and I should say every week that Audrey is in fact a blonde. She grew up in London, England, and has been a collector of blonde jokes since almost birth. Right, Audrey? That's correct. She has hundreds, of, perhaps thousands of them in her drawer, so we try to pull out a blonde joke each week. In fact, I don't think we've ever missed, maybe one time in all of this. And ladies and gentlemen, I also like to play the High Coalition Against Gun Violence, their community service message here. And this is directed toward, I believe it's directed toward gang members, if I'm not mistaken, because the idea here is they want people to not use guns in Ohio in an unlawful way. So let's hear what they have to say, and I hope, again, that the gangbangers are listening tonight and they will, in fact, lay down their guns.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Yes, it really is. So I hope folks pay attention to that. Well, let's look at some news items tonight, and one of the things we're going to try to do, it's a little bit different, so if we get knocked off the air, folks, don't leave us. We'll be back in about 2 minutes, and we haven't actually tested this on the air, so we're going to see what happens. Audrey, I think you've got a story here to start with, am I correct?
Hello. Okay. What you got? Turnbull, NCF. Authorities said an unsuccessful robber shot himself in the foot by shooting himself in the foot. Police said Kelvin of Albert Roberts, 28, botched his plan to rob a terrible convenience store by accidentally shooting his right foot. According to an arrest warrant, Roberts dropped a .45 caliber handgun in front of Das Land User on Sunday. The gun hit the ground and went off, a bullet striking Roberts in the foot. Roberts faces several charges that include attempted robbery with a dangerous weapon and possession of a weapon of mass destruction. Police said the handgun had been altered to fire .410 shotgun shells. Authorities said Roberts was in legal possession of the gun because of his felony cocaine possession conviction in 2002 in Chautauqua County in New York. Cherryville is about 40 miles northwest of Charlotte.
Oh, that's an interesting one. You remember last week we had a young gentleman shoot himself out. I think it was in the leg and also the right testicle. And he did a little hospital time, but these robbers, I think, can't we get a training program for them or something? I mean, there are too many of these cases here. They're out there using these handguns, and they don't know how to perform with them. So I'm not sure about that 410 shotgun shell, how that makes that a more dangerous weapon. I guess that is it a weapon of mass destruction? I suppose it 410 may hurt more than a 45. I'm not sure. I think each one probably has an equal punch. What else have you got there, Audrey? Oh, I know the one about no IDs for illegals in Michigan. Is that it? The one you want to talk about? Anyway, I guess that's what Michigan has done. Is that correct? They've decided that they're not going to have any IDs issued anymore to illegal immigrants in their state. So, go ahead, Audrey. Let us know what's going on there.
Michigan, no IDs for illegal immigrants by the Associated Press. Michigan will no longer let illegal immigrants obtain driver's licenses, a practice just seven other states continue to allow. The Secretary of State, Jerry Lynn Bland, who oversees the Motor Vehicle Department, announced the policy and said it would take effect Tuesday. The policy also bars people who are legal but not permanent United States residents from obtaining licenses. Legislation to allow those on temporary work or student visas to get licenses is pending in the legislature. The policy applies to first-time applicants for a Michigan driver's license or identification card. Updated procedures for renewals will be released soon. Hawaii, Maine, Maryland, New Mexico, Oregon, Utah, and Washington do not require drivers to prove legal status to obtain a license.
Isn't that interesting how this has changed over the past, the past 2 years? I think it began to change, but as the presidential election time grows closer, we've seen how this ID business for illegal immigrants, perspectives on that have changed. Remember the New York governor and attorney general made a change on that also. And so we'll begin to see this. I'm surprised. I didn't think it was 47 states that now that would not issue illegal or driver's licenses to illegal immigrants. That's or IDs. That's absolutely incredible. My perspective, that's progress. So three more states to go, and we'll be making it difficult for them. There's a story I want to talk about. I won't comment much on it, but one of the things that happened in Irving, Texas, at the Irving Police, who happen to be hiring right now, by the way. They have a very nice recruiting brochure, and if you're interested in that, they're going to be actually doing some of their selection process up here in the Michigan, Northwest Ohio area. You can give me a call, or you can go directly to the Irving Police Department's website, get a good account of it. They pay well. They prefer a bachelor's degree in criminal justice, and lots of nice benefits. And of course, you get to work in that city that's going to be the host for the, or still is, for that brand new Dallas Cowboys Stadium. I got to see that over the holidays. It's a billion-dollar facility, if you can believe that. But anyway, the Irving Police have been picking people up on different types of arrest charges, and when they're suspicious about their ID, whether or not they're legal residents in the United States or citizens, they'll do a little checking, and for any type of violation that allows them to make the arrest. And of course, when they do that, they can inquire about their legal status. But they got a message here from ICE, and ICE tells them, well, don't send us the names of any more people that have been arrested for a Class C misdemeanor. That's the lowest category in offense in Ohio. I'm not even sure you can do jail time for Class C misdemeanor, but it's things like skipping out on a traffic warrant if you have traffic tickets or something like that, writing a bad check of a small value, something like that. But ICE is telling them, don't contact us on those type of cases because we can't handle it. We have too much to do. But isn't that interesting? We're trying to do something about this immigration business, and turns out different. I thought this was kind of an interesting story here before we get to our radio shows from police headquarters show from years back. In fact, I'm not even going to have you read the story, Audrey, if you don't mind. Well, I'll just comment on it. But in Wales, they've had a bunch of prison inmates who were narcotics addicts who got arrested for taking and selling drugs, and they ended up going to prison. And a whole bunch of them, I guess, over a period of time, were forced or allowed to withdraw cold turkey from their narcotics. The government has come back and decided, if you can believe this, to pay them because they were the victims of this cold turkey withdrawal where they had to go through withdrawal without taking any type of narcotics. Isn't that something? Can you imagine that happening in the United States? Inmates who went through cold turkey withdrawal, which some people might say is the best, are now going to be paid in Wales and I think perhaps also Scotland because they had to do this. Absolutely incredible. I can't imagine something like that. One of the things I like to talk about on the show are books, and one of my favorite radio shows going back years is Garrison Keillor's Prairie Home Companion that's on Saturdays. And I'm fascinated with the guy on that show that's been with him for years named Fred Newman, who does all the sound effects. This guy can make the sound of anything with his mouth. I've never heard anyone like this. So I stumbled across, not even exactly sure how I found it, but I think I heard about, on another show. That's right. He was on NPR show in the morning, morning edition, and they were talking about his book called Mouth Sounds. And in this book, it's a book and a CD, and he actually teaches you how to make 200 different kinds of sounds of everything imaginable, some of them not real pleasant, as you can imagine, but others, falling trees, car wrecks, train whistles, on and on and on. This guy can make a sound. I mean, when you hear the show, at Prairie Home Companion, and you hear some of the things, you can't believe that a human being is making this sound. It sounds exactly like a train or a car wreck or whatever you're talking about. But if you're into that sort of thing and your kids might be interested in it, the book is called Mouth Sounds by Fred Newman. It also comes with an audio CD, so you can actually hear him make these sounds. What do you think of that, Audrey? Want to get that for your daughter? She might enjoy that. Well, let me play around with it first, and then I'll give you the book. Well, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're going to shift now to our major content area, and we're going to take a look at this radio series, mystery series years ago, that was called Police Headquarters. And there are a couple shows tonight that we might look at. They're 15 minutes each, so we'll probably have time. But the first one is called The Tommy Gun Murders. And speaking of sounds, one of the things I always liked about old-time radio, you couldn't be on radio unless you had some type of distinctive voice. And in all of these old shows, you'll certainly hear that. So here we go with episode one of a show called Police Headquarters, and the episode is called Tommy Gun Murders.
cars 12, 50, and 21. Cars 12, 50, and 21. Report to Central Station. Calling Detective Aiken. Detective Aiken in 41. Call your precinct. That's all.
Up now, Andy. Something big happened the way the daughter and the boy's out.
Yeah.
Tom's probably cut loose.
Police headquarters.
Yeah, this is Captain Aiken. What's up?
They wanted at the Crescent Garage down the east side, Captain. Now only the 10th precinct is on the scene.
What is it, murder?
Yeah, five of them.
Well, it's on my way. Step. Yeah, step on it, Andy.
Right.
Holy smoke, look at that crowd. Make them open up. Oh, that'll be good. You wait in the car, Andy.
This
right. All right, let me through here. Come on, stand back there. Open up here. Hello, Captain.
Hello, Captain Aiken.
How are you?
First grade,
what's going on down here?
It looks like another Valentine's Day affair, Captain, except they got a copper this time.
Who?
A young fella named Madredi. He heard the shots and come running up, and they got him with a Tommy gun.
Dirty sneaking rats. Who else they get?
They got four employees at the unemployed trucking company.
Racket case, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I know just where to put my finger on this one. Where can we get away from this mob?
There's an office right over here.
Good, let's use it. Any eyewitnesses?
Well, there was a fellow on the force who was with him, with Madredi, when he was killed. He was off duty, though, at the time.
Mm-hmm. Now bring him in.
Okay.
Police headquarters. Bunch of yellow rats. Hello, give me powers and identification.
Here's the man who was with Madredi.
Good, wait till I get the fingerprint bureau.
Right, sir.
Hello, Frank. Captain Aiken. Another one of those wholesale murder cases out of the Crescent Garage. A mix-up in the trucking racket. Killed a copper and four others. Stand by for description. All right, sir. What's your name?
Wilbur Smith, sir. I was talking to Madredi when...
You can say that. Did you see the mugs that shot him?
Yeah, there was a big touring car, top-up, and about five or six men in it.
Now, wait a minute. Frank, get the radio working for a large touring top-up. What color?
Gray.
Car's gray, Frank. Five or six mugs in it. Get that going and come back to the phone. All right, Smith, tell us what happened.
Well, I was talking to Pat, who was standing over in front of a cafe there on the corner.
Oh, Pat?
Pat Madredi, the officer they killed.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Well, all of a sudden, we hear shots in the garage here, and Pat jerks out his gun and beats it in this direction. Then a car whips out of this driveway and heads up the street. Pat puts a couple of shots into it, and then they cut loose on him with a Tommy gun, and it was all over.
Yeah.
I beat it into the garage here and see four guys laying on the floor, so I grabbed the phone and called headquarters.
You recognize any of the mugs in the touring?
No, none of them.
Probably brought in from out of town for the job, in which case they'll scatter as soon as they can and get back with their sticks. Now hold it.
Yeah.
Hello, Frank. Add this to your description. The car will probably have a bullet hole or two in it. I got a hunch the killers are from out of town and will be trying to get back. Cover all airports, railroad stations, and steamship terminals. We've got to head them off. Want to see me, Commissioner?
Yes, sit down.
Yes, sir.
What's been done in this garage affair?
All that's possible, sir. We've barricaded all roads and are searching every car. We've blocked railroad stations and steamships and airlines. We've got 1,000 men in the field right now.
And no trace of the killers?
One. We found the car abandoned. Powers went over it for fingerprints. He's checking the Department of Justice records right now. It's a new crowd, sir, not in our files.
Did you find out what was behind all this?
Yes, I talked to the head of the unemployed truckers, and he said some mugs had been trying to make the firm pay protection money and that they'd refused to do it.
So the racketeers think they can get away with blasting their way in, eh?
Yes, sir.
Well, they can't. What is this, a city or a gangster's hangout? We're not going to fool with this thing, Aiken. I want every man put on 24-hour duty until we find these killers.
Yes, sir.
Yes? Well, just a minute. For you, Aiken.
Thanks. Captain Aiken. What's that? Oh, nice work, Powers. New ones on us, huh? Okay, keep at it.
Something new?
Yes, Powers traced two of the prints on that car through the DJ records. One of the men was Antonio Moretti, once convicted in California for arson. The other was Ward Dugan, who served 7 years in San Quentin. Neither of them has ever been in our record, sir.
All right, get after it, Aiken.
Yes, sir.
Wire California authorities, complete description. They'll probably have more dope on them than we have. Get pictures and send them my telephoto all over the country. This state won't rest, and it has those men in the death house awaiting execution.
I'll see it. My heck, that fast work. Get me the commissioner. Hello, commissioner. I just got a wire from the California authorities. Both of these men were picked up as they got off the train in San Francisco. Dugan made a break for it and was killed. They have him already, and I got a hunch that he was the guy who handled the Tommy gun. Yes, sir. I'll leave tonight, sir.
Captain?
Assign Sergeant O'Brien to my desk for a week or so and call my home and tell my wife I have my bag packed. I'm going after the rat who killed Patrick McGrady. Yes? Chief Nelson?
Yes?
I'm Captain Aiken.
Well, how do you do? We've been expecting you, Captain. Sit down.
Thanks.
Have a nice trip?
Yeah, had a long one.
Well, we've got your man for you, Aiken.
Good. You received the extradition papers, didn't you, Chief?
Yes, got them by airmail this morning.
Well, Moretti is only two steps from the gallows right now.
Big case?
Yeah, the biggest manhunt our department has engaged in several years. I want to thank you fellows out here for the cooperation you've given us.
Oh, that's all right. Smoke?
No, thanks.
When are you leaving?
In the morning.
Come alone?
Yes.
You fellows back east don't have much information on Moretti, do you?
No.
If you had, you'd have sent four men to take him back.
Four men? Why?
Moretti's a bad hombre.
I can take care of him all right.
Well, I've no doubt that you can handle Moretti. It's his mob that I'm worrying about.
You think they'll try to spring him?
Think it? I know it.
What makes you so sure?
Moretti has a lot of money behind him. Big money.
Mm.
He has a lot of friends who'd think nothing of pulling a regular massacre to get him free.
Now, why haven't they tried it before now?
For the simple reason that he's been too well guarded. As soon as they find out that you're taking him back alone, they're going to try to spring him sometime during the trip east.
Hmm.
They should have sent someone with you, Aiken.
Well, they did give me a private car. That'll help some. And I have the usual supply of leg irons and chains.
Well, I wish you luck. Oh, yes, there's something else. We're delivering another prisoner to your estate, a hot check artist named Turner.
Hmm.
Maybe you'd like to take him along as sort of anchor for Moretti, chain them together, huh?
All right with me. Good idea sometimes to have a drag on another prisoner.
All right. We'll meet you at the depot 5 minutes before train time. And Aiken.
Yes?
Keep your eyes and ears open.
I will, Chief. Time, I see.
Yes. Where's your private car?
Now, this one right here.
All right, men, bring him up. This is Moretti, Captain Aiken.
I'm expected to see a man, not a rat.
Yeah, touch your face, copper.
I can see you two are going to get along just fine.
Yeah.
This is Turner, the forger. He's chained to Moretti.
Okay.
Now, if you'll just sign for these men.
Here you go. Well, Chief Nelson, these men are under my responsibility now.
Yes, and I'm glad to get them off my hands. Watch them like a hawk, Aiken. They're mean, both of them.
I'll watch them, Chief. Well, step aboard, boys. I think the prosecutor will be mighty glad to see both you men. Now, so long, Chief. When you come east, look us up.
I'll do that, Aiken. Keep an eye on those men now.
Okay, Chief. They're as good as convicted right now.
Expected, I guess.
How's yours, Moretti?
Moretti's asleep.
Oh, yeah. Too bad you got to be traveling with a rat like him, Turner.
Well, I'm getting what I deserve. My wife tried to tell me where I was heading and she found out I was passing those checks.
Mm.
Oh, how far are we now?
About halfway.
What are we doing in Pleasanton?
Pleasanton? Why?
To take on water there, and I'd like to get a breath of fresh air.
Sorry, Turner, but I got to keep the chain to Moretti. If it was you alone, I'd be glad to let you take a breather, but Moretti has to be watched.
Okay, Captain. When do we get there?
Well, we're It's slowing down for the stop now.
Maybe you could open the door at each end of the car to let some new air in here. It's getting pretty stuffy.
Well, I can do that. How's that?
Better. A lot better.
Well, I'd better shut him now.
Put him up, Copper.
Hey, what's that?
Up high, Copper.
Oh, a jail delivery, huh? Should have known that you were the one to watch, Turner. I'm ready to ask him to open that door. I'd have told him to go to blazes.
What are you talking about, Copper?
Oh, don't try to cover him up. I know he's working with you. Why didn't you bring a mob? 5 men are hardly enough.
You better shut up and get those keys out. We're taking Moretti with us. Come on, boys. Come on in.
No, you're not getting away with this. You're not getting away with this.
Ah, you ain't got a chance, please. Give me them keys.
Not a chance, Mark.
Trying to get funny with me.
Yeah.
Get his keys, boys.
All right, put
them
up.
Yeah,
here,
Oliver.
All of them.
Holy smoke,
the dick. Fedor, if it makes any difference to you. Hurt you much, Cap? Not much. Say what's coming off around here. Things are happening too fast for me.
Take it easy, Captain. I've 7 men here. We've been after these mugs for a year. It was this gang that pulled your garage murders. Chain them together, boys.
Yeah, but how'd you know they were getting on the train back there? How'd you fellas happen to be here?
Why, we've been on the train since you left. Just waiting for something like this.
Huh?
We had the car here wired so we'd know if anyone came in. When we got the signal, we...
Signal? From who?
Why, from Frank Turner here.
Turner? You mean that hot check passer?
Yeah, only he's not a hot check passer. He happens to be the Western Director of the Department of Justice.
Police headquarters. Okay, Captain. Hello, Tim. Order 2 patrols and a motorcycle escort to the Union Station. Captain Aiken's arriving with 6 prisoners. Police headquarters.
Tommy Gunn murders. Interesting case. A little bit of suspicion there and subterfuge. So maybe not the most interesting story in the world, but to look at these historically, it's interesting to see what people used to sit on their couches and chairs in the living room with the lights turned down low and perhaps a plate or bowl of popcorn and listen to this this type of radio show. Let's hear the second one here, and we'll be done with the police headquarters business. The second one is called the Life Insurance Scheme.
Thank you. Police headquarters. Just a minute, Sheriff. Chief's office.
Give me Chief Robertson, quick.
Yes, sir. For you, Chief.
Chief Robertson.
This is Sheriff Klein, Harmonsville. We've just had an earthquake. Half the town is in ruins. We need help and need it quick. There's another one now. We just...
Hello? 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 Peters. Peters, it's an earthquake. Put every available officer on duty.
Yes, sir.
Hey, look at that chandelier swing, sir. Look out!
Never mind the chandelier. It's over now. We just got a sample of the quake that hit Harmonsville. Sheriff Klein phoned that it's destroying half the town. We've got to get aid there quick.
Yes, sir.
And, Peters.
Yes?
Put all exchange officers to work calling hospitals and relief agencies. We need all available doctors and nurses.
Yes, sir.
Radio.
Send all south area squad cars to cover the earthquake at Harmonsville. Have them report directly to us.
Yes, sir.
Cars, attention all cars. Cars 21 to 55, depart immediately to investigate the earthquake at Harmonsville. Western District Patrol will move into southern area and take up local patrol. Calling all cars, attention all cars.
There's been an earthquake.
All doctors are needed at Harmonsville on emergency
duty. Police headquarters. We need all available nurses at Harmonsville. Earthquake. Emergency.
Order Company 6, 12, and 14 to aid the Harmonsville Fire Department. The whole town is exploding.
Here's a complete list of dead and injured, sir.
Good. Put them on the desk.
Well, the worst is all over now, Chief. Don't you think you better get some sleep?
Sleep? No, I'm good for the rest of the day.
All right, Chief. You've been up 2 days and nights now, sir.
Yes?
Mr. Logan to see you, Chief.
All right, send him in. Now, don't worry about me, Peters. That quake was a terrible thing, but it looks like we have the situation well under control. Come in.
Robinson?
Yes.
I'm Spencer Logan, investigator for the major insurance company.
Oh, sit down, Mr. Logan. This is Captain Peters.
Well, thank you. How do you do, Peters?
Oh, glad to know you.
Our company is making adjustments and paying policies just as rapidly as possible in the Harmonsville quake.
Good. That will speed relief work.
We realize that. However, in hurrying to pay all claims, it's necessary to increase our vigilance.
You mean against fraudulent claims?
Yes. Any major disaster such as this always has its share. My company wants to pay all legitimate claims as soon as it can. But it's my job to see that there are no frauds.
I see.
It's too large a job for one man, so I'm appealing to you for one or two men from your office to speed things up. Otherwise, claimants will be forced to wait their turn.
Well, just what do you want from my men?
Well, they will be asked to assist only in cases where our investigators can't handle the situation.
I see.
Take this case, for instance.
Pull up a chair, Peters.
Yes, sir. Now, here's a typical case. The case of Ward Williams. Williams and his brother owned a small shop on White Street, right in the center of the earthquake district. The shop, not insured, is in ruins. However, Williams' brother, Hugh Williams, is heavily insured with our company.
You mean life insurance?
Yes. Late yesterday, rescuers pulled the body from under the ruins. This Ward Williams claims that it's the body of his brother. He identified it in one of the temporary morgues. He also produced a $50,000 policy and demanded immediate payment.
Well, that's not strange, is it?
No, that part of it isn't. However, I was present when Williams identified the body by the clothes and shoes. He appeared greatly grieved. But another merchant asked him if he was sure that the body was that of his brother. Williams was shaken and answered in a menacing tone, "Sure it is. And nobody better say it isn't."
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's been my experience that anyone who has the least possible reason to believe a relative alive will grasp at the hope of any suggestion to that effect.
Yes, that's right.
Not only that, but I took the other merchant aside and asked him why he suggested that the body might not be Hugh Williams. And he told me that as he, the merchant, ran from his store, he thought he saw Hugh Williams and his brother run into the street.
Well, were there any other employees in the shop at the time of the quake?
No, but we have only Williams' word for that.
Well, what do you propose to do?
Well, in this particular case, I propose to enlist your aid in finding Hugh Williams, whom I believe to be still alive.
You mean you believe him to be in a plot with his brother to collect the insurance?
Yes, in which case finding him will prove very difficult, as he would naturally go into hiding until after the claim had been paid.
Well, if our cooperation will speed relief, I'll be glad to assign a few men to you.
Well, thank you.
Just as a starter, Chief, I'd like to take a crack at this Williams case.
All right, Peters. If you have any ideas on it, I'm sure that Mr. Logan will be grateful for your assistance.
Indeed, I will.
All right. Just give me this Williams address, and I'll soon have a report for you. Yes, sir, I got some ideas of my own on this thing.
Peter, Central Police Station. There's a little matter I'd like to talk to you about.
Certainly, Captain. Come in.
Oh, thanks.
Sit down here, Captain.
No, thanks. I can't stay long. Mr. Williams, one of our patrolmen picked up a man about 45 who'd been struck by a hit-and-run driver. When this man regained consciousness, we asked his name, and he claims he is Hugh Williams, but doesn't know where he lives.
Hugh?
The doctor says he's suffering from amnesia, loss of memory, and I thought he might be your brother.
My brother Hugh is dead. I saw him with my own eyes as they pulled his body from the wreckage of my store.
You're positive in your identification?
I am.
Well, I guess that's that. This fellow's name may be Hugh Williams, but he's probably not the person this adjuster thinks he is.
No. Adjuster?
Yeah, a fellow named Logan, investigator for the major insurance company. You see, his idea is that during the confusion of the quake, your brother ran from the building before it fell and was making his way to the city when he was struck by an automobile.
I'm sorry, Captain Peters, but my brother was buried yesterday. This other is a case of mistaken identity.
Yeah, that's what I figured, Mr. Williams. A fellow ought to know his own brother. But the insurance company isn't taking any chances during a time like this. The investigator is going to have a talk with this fellow tomorrow morning. Poor guy won't last long, and the adjuster figures he'll talk before he dies.
You say he's in the hospital?
Yeah.
Which one?
Oh, I don't know. I saw the name in the paper, but I'm not sure. Why? Are you interested?
Huh? Oh, no, no.
Well, I'm sorry I bothered you, Mr. Williams.
That's all right.
Well, so long. I'm sorry about your brother.
Thanks.
Well, how'd he take it?
Just like I thought he would, Logan. He was startled when I sprung it on him, and he sort of calmed down, and just before I left, he tried to ask, unconcerned-like, where this man was. Oh, he's interested, all right.
You hit it, Peters. Making him think that his brother was struck by a hit-and-run driver is one way of finding out just how sure he is that the man found in the ruins was his brother.
Yeah, and I figure that if Ward Williams knows that his brother is alive, he'll try to see him and shut him up.
Right. You say he asked which hospital the man was in?
Yeah, and I told him I didn't remember, but I saw it in a newspaper. He'll watch every paper that comes out. Come on.
Where are you going now?
To give the next edition of The Sun a very interesting little article.
Did you get the paper?
Yes. It's in the home edition. The one Williams will most likely read.
Oh, good. Let's see it.
It's on page one, just as you gave it to them.
Oh. Man near death insists he is not dead.
There's a headline for you.
An unidentified man, about 45, lies dying in Providence Hospital, insisting that his name is Hugh Williams. Police find that a Hugh Williams is alleged to have died in the recent Harmonsville earthquake and believe that the man is suffering from mental attacks as the result of being struck by a hit-and-run driver sometime last night. Well, that'll pull Williams out of anything, Will.
Yes. Providence Hospital, eh?
Oh, Chief's office, Captain Peters. Oh, hello, Burke. What's that? When? All right, beat it over to the hospital and get into bed as we planned. There you are. We've got him worried already.
Burke, the man I left to watch William, says that he bought every edition of the afternoon papers and took them home. After about 30 minutes, he came out with a copy of The Sun in his pocket and started for the city in his car.
Good.
I told Burke to beat it to the hospital and get into bed as we'd planned. We'll arrange to meet our friend Mr. Williams at the hospital and ask him why all the interest if he's so sure his brother is dead. Everything all set, Burke?
Yeah.
Well, get into bed and pull the covers up around your neck.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. Got the nurse instructed?
Yes. When Williams asks to see the man, she's to give him the room key and let him come up alone.
Good work. Hey, you better pull down that shade and turn off the light. We'll hide behind this screen. Williams should be here any minute.
Right.
Good. Now, there's just enough light in the room to see the bed. You all set, Burke?
Yeah, this is a cinch.
All right. Get over here with me, Logan. I figure we won't have to long to wait.
Say, I'm getting...
Somebody's at the door. He's trying the knob. All right, put him up. Get the lights on, Logan.
All right. Say, what
the... No, you don't. Get his hand, Logan. His right hand. There's something in it.
Give me that. Well, I'll be...
What is it?
Cyanide. He was all set to bump his brother off.
Why, you crazy fool. I never thought you'd go as far as murder.
Why not? The paper said he was going to die anyway. He'd ran it on me. He'd ruined my chances of getting that $50,000.
Now, you and your brother had this all framed, didn't you? He was to disappear and you were to collect the insurance. Is that right?
Yes.
Well, who was the man whose body was found in the wreckage?
A tramp who'd come in looking for a handout just as the quake started.
And you tried to fool us with the wrong corpse, huh? Well, I guess we got it back on you. Hey, wake up, Burke.
Hmm? Who, me? Why, that's not my brother. It's a trick.
Yeah. You were tricking us, and we were tricking you. Take him down, Burke.
Twist there at the end of the police headquarters show called Life Insurance Scheme. These shows went on, I think this one lasted for about 4 or 5 years, if I'm not mistaken, but they ran 15 minutes. Isn't the music interesting? A very dramatic music, and perhaps plays a little too long for our standard today, but the actors, of course, were very fine. Very fine actors. I have one more news story tonight I thought was interesting. I had seen this in American Police Beat magazine. Then the New York Times just did a story on it today. And I'm going to raise this thing up on the computer, see if it works. That looks like it's not going to, so we may have to go back to two computers, Audrey. Am I correct? Why not? But anyway, it's a story about how the United States Border Patrol, I guess on northern and southern border of the United States, are using horses more and more. And they have sort of a dramatic historical account of it, too. They go back way back to the 1920s when the Border Patrol started. And they used horses, of course, at that time. But they've come to find out that these horses have, I didn't really know this, but I did supervise a master's thesis once on horse patrols in America when I was a professor at the University of Cincinnati. But anyway, these horses are sensitive to people being around them, even people that they can't see. So they can tell from the actions of the horses. I don't think they're training them to do this, but in a sense, they're training the riders, the Border Patrol agents, to know when the horse is reacting to something. I don't ride horses, so maybe this is common knowledge among people. But they're very often roused up when illegal immigrants are crossing the border. When somebody's around them that's not one of the Border Patrol agents, and the agents know to look more closely, and sure enough, when they look, they find illegal immigrants. But that's kind of interesting that they're using horses more and more. And in our book, Strange But Real, that we did last year with five other people, we had that section in there about the dogs and the things that are going on with dog scent, which was just amazing to me how discreet that these dogs' noses can actually be in terms of detecting different types of smells and scents. And we always knew that we had cadaver dogs and that type of thing, but they're starting to go farther, or much farther beyond that now. So here we are in the 21st century, and in some ways we're turning back to animals to provide some sophistication in criminal investigation and the Border Patrol business that we haven't done before. Well, folks, that's just about it for tonight. We'll be signing off, and be sure to look at the webpage, Blog Talk Radio, Jumbo Justice Radio site, and see what we're going to have for next week. I can't tell you exactly, but I think we're going to have somebody in a guest in a capacity we've never had on the show before, and we've had people in virtually every capacity over the past 71 shows, so we think it'll be interesting, and we'll put it on the site as soon as we've confirmed that. So good night, and we'll be seeing you again.
We'll meet again, don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. Again, don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
Radio.